Okay, Parsha Shmini, Tafshin Ayin Aleph, and this is also Parsha's Para. Parsha's Para is the third of the Parshios between Purim and Pesach, right? We start with talking about Parsha Shkolim, Parsha Zohar, Parsha's Para, and then Parsha Sachodesh before Rosh Chodesh Nisan. But we are focusing primarily on a couple of psukim in Parsha Shmini, and we'll link it at the end to Parshas Para. Now, what we're going to do with here today is we are going to get very technical with Rashi's methodology in the beginning, and then very theoretical and philosophical with the essential message that is developed via the methodology of Rashi. So, we're going to look into the Pasuk, and we're going to see a strange little quirk in the way Rashi decides to analyze this Pasuk. Okay, in order to set the tone, let's create the setting here. Where are we? We are in Perek Yud. And Perek Yud can only be understood if you first read the Perek before, focusing primarily on the last Pasuk, Pasuk Chaf Dalet of Perek Tes. This is Parsha Shmini. This is the story of the dedication of the Mishkan. Okay, now the Jewish people, as you well know, from all our learning and all the previous parshios, have spent a tremendous amount of effort. They have invested a huge amount of effort, mesiras nefesh, and above all, yirah shamayim, fear, which is restraint, which is gevura, which is holding back, in ensuring that the kelim they built for the Beis HaMikdash and the structure of the Beis HaMikdash itself and all the curtains that were made and every item that became part of the Beis HaMikdash conformed precisely to the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It did not show any individualized, disconnected self-expression. The expression, all of the artistic ability that came out of these people, that they found within themselves and they utilized to build the Mishkan, was completely conforming to or attached to the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the perfection that this Mishkan would really be a symbol of, that flowed through them, utilizing, as we spoke, their individuality and their talents, but conforming exactly to the pure MS, the pure truth, the pure perfection that Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted to manifest, to express in this world, in a physical place, in the Mishkan. There's a lot of talk, which we haven't gotten into, how the building of the Mishkan represents the Briyas HaOlam, everything that preceded, so to speak, the world, all the truths that brought this world into being were expressed in the Mishkan, and Klal Yisrael adhered to those truths and were able to express those truths in a material way, and that's why it consistently says regarding the Mishkan that everything they did kasher, tziva, Hashem, es Moshe, exactly, without any deviation from the source to the outcome. Now here, after all of this effort, it's finally the eighth day of the dedication of the Mishkan, which was a process that took a week, and the final day is when everything starts being, for the first time, functioning and being used the way it should be used. And that's why it's Yom HaShmini, the eighth day, almost as if it's the eighth day of Briyas HaOlam, the day when everything was completed and everything starts to function. And it was the greatest day for Klal Yisrael, even greater in some ways than Kabbalah HaTorah. Because by Kabbalah HaTorah, they stood at the bottom of the mountain, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu broke open the heavens and revealed himself to the people, and they experienced a closeness or a vision, so to speak, or an expansion of their minds that they had never experienced, but it came from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to them as a free gift. But by Yom HaShmini, it was an entirely different experience. Here, they had found within themselves the devotion to build this Mishkan precisely according to the will of Hashem. And therefore, when the fire came down from Shemayim, it was really a statement of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's acceptance, appreciation, ability. They had created the capacity, so to speak, for Hashem to dwell right here on earth among people. And they created a Mishkan that was a place of total purity and truth, of a place of emes, represented the emes, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu was present there, and they created it. So when they saw that they were able to achieve this, to bring the Shekhinah down here, their happiness, their sense of victory, their sense of achievement was boundless. And we've spoken about this, right, in the Purim, in the context of Purim. Now, Pasuk Chaf Dalet in Perek Tes says that after all the efforts, they finally brought the Karbanos, which is like the initiation of the whole Avoda in the Mishkan, and look what happens. Vateitze Eish Milifnei Hashem. And a fire went out from before Hashem, in other words, from God's place, so to speak, directly from there, from the, you know, the highest places, so to speak, you know, highest, not physically highest, but spiritually, the highest places of the world, and it came straight down right here on earth, right where they were, into their Mishkan. V'tochel al ha-mizbeach, and it consumed the offering on the Mizbeach. And the end of the pasuk says, Vayar kol ha'am, and the whole nation saw this, and what was their reaction? Vayaronu vayiplu al p'neihem. They exalted. There was a boundless, overwhelming, uncontainable joy, and they all fell on their faces. They had seen the Shekhinah come down right here into gracing the work of their own hands, and they knew what they had achieved. Now, this experience had an effect on the people. They were so drawn, almost like to an overpowering magnet, to the experience of the Shekhinah being so close to them, that inevitably, as Moshe is going to explain, there was the possibility expressed through the situation of how Nadav and Avihu, the sons of Aaron, responded to this, and here's what they did by Yikhu. B'nei Aaron, Nadav Avihu. So what did Nadav and Avihu do at this moment? They took their pans, and they put in their pans some type of fire. V'yasimu aleha ketores. Remember everything we've talked about by ketores? We're going to go back to that a little bit. They took fire, and they put the ketores on the fire, the embers that were burning. That's called the fire. They decided to offer a ketores. Now, we've spoken about ketores as the most perfect of all the offerings. Remember, in Tetzaveh, it's listed not among the other kelim in the Beis HaMikdash, the golden mizbeach, and its ketores offering is not included in the description of all the other kelim in Parshas Truma, really, but it's all the way at the end, when all the aspects of the Mishkan are discussed, finally, then the Torah talks about Ketores, and Ramban says because it's the most elevated and most perfect of all the aspects of the Beis HaMikdash. And we talked about the idea that Ketores is, remember, neshama, neshima, the sense of life, of being alive, of connection to true Chaim, right? And so they offer Ketores. Vayakrivu lifnei Hashem, they bring it before Hashem. They actually went into the Kodesh HaKadoshim. This was not on the agenda for the day. They were not commanded to do this. This was something they did on their own, and they brought it before Hashem, and it's called Eish Zara Asher Lotziva Osam, but it wasn't commanded. It was foreign. It was not something that they were allowed to do. So why would they do such a thing? The next Pasuk says, now look at the similarity between Pasuk Beis and the pasuk we read before, pasuk Chaf Dalet. Vateitze Eish Milifnei Hashem, same words. And a fire went out from before Hashem. Vatochal, and it consumed Osam, them. Vayamusu Lifnei Hashem, and they died before Hashem. And the words before Hashem are a huge compliment that their death was right in the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and because of the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So what happened here? What happened here? First of all, in terms of what happened here, the Mefarshim talk about that different leniences or liberties they took that they shouldn't have taken. However, even when the different commentaries and the different opinions in the Gemara discuss what they did, the Marsha, who often comments on these things, explains that even these indictments have to be understood in a deeper way in what the Gemara is trying to say. For example, one opinion is that they were drunk. So the Marsha explains they were drunk, as we speak about, like, similar to Purim. The Marsha doesn't say this, but we know, Adelo Yada, they said that they were drunk on Das. They entered Pardes, seeing the fire come down, getting that close to a revelation, being so consumed with the experience of having the Ruchni is so close to them, having the Shekhinah so close to them, almost tangible, that opened their minds. It brought them to a state of you want nevuah, we say, of das. Pardes is that word, that acronym we use for entering to the deepest realms of prophecy and understanding, right? Pshat, remez, drush, so the levels of deeper and deeper levels of the Torah. It says they entered pardes. They went into a whole new place of ruchnius, of a prophetic state almost, a state of expansion where the what we just talk about theoretically, the ruchnius, they experienced, and they became drunk, intoxicated by it, that they couldn't control in a sense, or they lost control over their logic. And they decided in this state of mind that even if they would lose their lives, it was worth having the experience of taking the ketores, experiencing, like we've spoken about, being fully alive in ruchnius, having the neshama be there, animate them to such a point that it would be worth taking that ketores into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, even if they lost their physical lives because of it. That moment of that pleasure was so overpowering, so irresistible, that they lost their sense, they lost their logic, they overstepped the lines. And my grandfather says here, my grandfather brings down here, that he brings a mechilta on the words Vayikchu b'nei Aaron. Here he's what he says, Be'inyan zeh haya chet shel Nadav ve'Avihu. What was their chet? Shemerov ahava. Out of enormous love, nichnasu lahakrif ketores lefnei Hashem, they entered the Holy of Holies to bring ketores. Asher lo tziva osam, that was not commanded of them. Ka'amram, as our chachamim say, he brings a mechilta, af heim besimchasam, even them in their state of total joy at seeing the fire come down on the mizbeach, kevan shera'u esh chadasha, when they saw this fire, amdu, they stood up, Lahosif Ava al Ha'ava, to even get to the next level of Ava, to increase that experience even more. Now we, as regular people, we know what it feels like when a person is so gripped by not the, as we call it, the Eitz HaChayim, when they're not feeling that in magnetic pull of the Emes or the Tov or the perfection or the Ruchnius. But we know, we can relate to when a person feels the opposite, when they're pulled by what we call the Yetzirah, right? Or the sense of the freedom of total self-expression, the freedom of total indulgence in something that is like an urge that is so overpowering to me that I just want to express it, indulge in it, satisfy it, that we do things sometimes that are illogical. We do things that risk, you know, our reputation, our status, our everything we've built up in life. We can see that happening. We see that happening to the negative side. But that very same force exists on the positive side. Now, that's really what happens here in the Pasuk with how Rashi is working and how Rashi is choosing to analyze this Pasuk. There's a funny little quirk here. And it's very technical. But it's because of this great philosophical concept. If you look in the Pasuk Gimel, Moshe has to now speak to Aaron about the death of his two children. So look at the pasuk how it's written. Vayomer Moshe el Aaron, Hu asher diber Hashem. This is what Hashem has spoken. You see that line now in the Chumash? There's a line. That's called the psik. That's not random. That's there for a very specific reason. The question is why. It's dividing between the first statement and the next statement. Then the pasuk says, Lamar saying, Bikrovai ekadesh, those that are close to me, I will be sanctified. My kedusha, and we know kedusha means the understanding that people have that I am mufrash, separated, incomprehensible, completely beyond anything they can grasp. Right? That will increase through these people that are closest to me. V'alpana alpnei kol ha'am ekabed, and in before the entire nation, I will be even more honored. V'yidom Aaron, Aaron was dom, silent. Look at Rashi. There are four parts to this pasuk. Number one, v'yomer Moshe Aaron hu asher diber Hashem. Number two, bekrovai ekadesh, through my close ones I will be sanctified. Number three, before the nation, the entire nation, I will be honored. And number four, and Aaron was silent. There are four concepts here in the pasuk. Look what Rashi does. First, he explains the first part of the pasuk, Hu Asher Diber Hashem. This is what Hashem has spoken. Then, what does Rashi do next? What are the next words that Rashi comments on? Vayidom Aron. That was the last two words of the pasuk. Then what does Rashi do? Then he goes back and translates, explains Bikrovai. And then he goes back and explains Alpi Kol Apnei Kol Ha'am Ekabed. What happened here? Rashi decided to translate, to explain Vayidom Aron out of place. Right after Vayomer Moshe Aron, Hu Asher Diber Hashem. What's Rashi doing? Why is Rashi doing that? When, you know, sometimes the very structure of Rashi is part of the explanation. He's working with what's really going on in the pasuk, and he's showing it to you by the way he structures the commentary. It's an astonishing thing. In other words, Rashi's style is part of Rashi's explanation. So, this is an issue. This is a point that my grandfather brings up, and he explains that the psik and what Rashi's doing are the same concept. Rashi is working with the understanding of why that psik is there, why that line is there. He explains that when did Aaron become silent? After Moshe explained to him that Hashem has already stated that there's a reality in this world that through the closest ones there are to Hashem, through them and their deaths, actually, Hashem becomes even more elevated. Is after Aaron heard the explanation, is that when he became quiet? Or Vayidom, which is past tense, it's written Vayidam, right? It's written without a vav, Vayidam, like as if it was and he was quiet. Is it that Aaron was already silent prior to the explanation? But the pasuk writes in a readable form, and he explains here that the psik means that when Moshe said to Aaron, Vayomer Hashem, Vayomer Moshe Aaron, Ze Asher Diber Hashem, stop. At that point, Vayidom Aaron. That's what Rashi's doing. That's when Aaron was already silent. That's the end. That's when Aaron already accepted the gzera, and that's the reason there's a psik there. As soon as Moshe said, this is what Hashem has said, that's when Aaron already accepted it. Now, we have to go further. What is in those words that at that point, immediately, Aaron accepted it and was already silent? And then, what is the point of the rest of the words? Right? So there are two ways to understand that phrase, Vayomer Moshe Aaron, Ze Asher Diber Hashem. This is what Hashem has spoken. That these words itself, as we're saying, according to Rashi's structure, that is enough for Aaron to go silent, to withhold any comments. Are these words just an introduction to what Hashem said? Or are these words a message in and of themselves? That's really what's happening here. The truth is, these words are a message in and of themselves, which Aaron understood. And then the Torah explains further the message that Aaron understood by telling us, Bikrovai Ekadesh Alpnei Kolam Ekabed. But Aaron understood it already without the Torah having to explain it. So how does that work? So Rashi, looking to help us out with the Pshat, is saying, if these are an introduction, let's go the Pshat way, simple, straightforward reading. These are an introduction to what Moshe is about to say. So where did Hashem say, Bikrovai Ekadesh? Ze Asher, Hu Asher Dibur Hashem, this is what Hashem has already spoken, saying, Bikrovai Ekadesh, through my ones that are closest to me, I will be honored. Well, where did Hashem say that? If you want to read this literally, you have to find the source. So Rashi tells us he didn't actually say it like that, but he said something very similar to that. Where do you think Hashem said something very similar to that? Look in and go back to Shemos, Perek Chaf Tes. Okay, actually, where's my Chumash? Perek Shemos, Pasuk Chaf Tes, Perek Chaf Tes. I'm sorry, 29. Which comes right before Perek Lamed, and you know what Perek Lamed's about, right? Go look at first the Perek Lamed in Shemos, and let's remind ourselves what it's about. 480. Okay, what's Perek Lamed about? Turn to Perek Lamed, 482. This is what we keep going back to. This is the last Perek in Titzaveh, where Hashem teaches us the, gives us the instructions for the Mizbeach HaKetores. The Perek Lamed is about the Mizbeach HaKetores. And remember what we said just before. The Ramban explained back there that the Ketores is not listed in Truma, the previous Parsha, with all the other Kalim, although it's one of the three Kalim in the Beis HaMikdash. There was a menorah, a shulchan, and a golden Mizbeach. And yet the golden Mizbeach, where they offered Ketores, is not listed. It's put here at the end of Tetzaveh, after the entire Mishkan is described, and all the different parts of it, and Ramban says because it's the ultimate, it's the highest point, it's the culmination of all things. Right before this discussion of the Ketores, now turn the page back, at the end of Perek Chavtes, this is where HaKadosh Baruch Hu says something similar to what Moshe just told Aaron here, Bikrovai Ekadesh, through those closest to me, I will be sanctified. So if you look at Perek Chavtes, this is the story, this is the end of the discussion, the instructions about all the karbanos. Specifically, I'd say the karban ola, which is offered every morning and every afternoon, which is completely consumed, which is the karban they just offered in Parsha Shmini, that the fire came down from heaven, which made everybody, exalt and become overwhelmed. The first time that they offered an ola and the fire consumed it straight from Shemayim, straight from heaven. That's what's being talked about here. And when the Torah finishes discussing the karban ola, it says here in Pasuk Mem Gimel 43, V'no'adati shama libnei Yisrael, and I shall be met there, so to speak, from the word moed. It'll be a meeting place. I will be, in a way, I will be seen there, or I will be experienced there, as if Klal Yisrael will meet with me there. V'no'adati shama libnei Yisrael, v'nikdash b'chvodi. Those are the two words. And I will be sanctified, more seen as even more kadosh, in my honor, b'chvodi. So it doesn't exactly say I will be sanctified through people that are close to me, but I will be sanctified through my honor. So, first of all, what's happening here is this, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is almost summing up the purpose of the Karban Ola, which consumes completely this offering, which is purchased by the communal funds of all of Klal Yisrael, so that this offering, that's why, by the way, they gave Chatzi Shekel every year. They gave the shekel, so the entire nation contributed to the purchase of the twice daily offerings of the Ola, which was completely consumed, and the purpose of the Ola was to demonstrate, in a material way, that Klal Yisrael are kind of expressing that if we could allow ourselves to be completely consumed in an act of devotion to God, we would be willing to, but Hashem wants us to live, but that's our kavana. Our kavana is that we are so attached to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that, in a sense, we are completely devoted, except that we express our devotion through life, through mitzvahs, through living, not through giving it all up. But the korban represents that's where we're really at in our head. And that's so elevated and that's so holy that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, through this, I will be met, so to speak, experienced here through this karbana, this karban, and I will be sanctified. My honor will be increased and be even more kadosh. Right? So, and this introduces the Ketores. So we have, first of all, the idea that this experience of devotion, total self, sacrifice to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is an act of great aspiring. A person, is demonstrating that they're aspiring to great Kedusha, and they're aspiring to be attached to real life. Now, when Hashem Moshe, going back to our Parsha, says to Aaron, Hu Asher Dibra Hashem, this is what Hashem has said, and if we just read that as an introduction to Hashem previously stating something like this, Rashi says here that when Moshe says, Hashem has said, Bekrovai Ekadesh, through those close to me, I will be honored. That's really the meaning of that pasuk we just read in Tetzaveh. So look at Rashi. Hu Asher Diber Hashem, Heichan Diber, where did he say this? So he brings that pasuk we just read. V'no'adati Shama L'Bnei Yisrael, and I will be met there, experienced there in a certain way, with Bnei Yisrael, the Nekadesh Bechvodi, and my honor will be even more sanctified. Al Tomer, don't read it, Bechvodi, my honor, Ella, now there's a play on the words here, b'mechu badai, through those who honor me. I will be sanctified via those who honor me. So you have to rework the word to make it, you know, be that this concept that Hashem has already established, that that Hashem is sanctified through those that so desire to be close to Him. However, that's how Rashi goes. Okay. However, Ramban says you don't need to do that, because what's already implied in the pasuk is what comes before the psik. In other words, Ramban goes to tell us that when Moshe said to Aaron, "Hu asher diber Hashem," that is the message, and you don't need to find an exact pasuk that actually states the message, because the word dibor itself means the gezerah, or the will, or the decree of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the way it is. Ramban says, according to his approach, is that this is a message in and of itself, and he brings numerous proofs that the word dibor, kasher diber Hashem, as it is used in other places in Chumash or in Navi, means as Hashem is decreed, and the decree does not mean necessarily directly expressed in words, but known to be the will of Hashem. That it's known that this is the way it is with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now we go back to another idea that we established a few weeks ago. The dibor of Hashem, Ramban is saying, is the known, experienced, self-evident will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that itself, that speaks for itself. And what is the known will of Hashem, with or without a pasuk? The will of Hashem is bikrovai ekadesh, that it is true. The decree is, the fact is, the force that exists in this world is, there's a real force, and it's understood through this phenomenon, that through the ones closest to Hashem, most desiring to almost let go of their attachment to this world, and their desire to really sacrifice everything, to take the risk of losing their hold on this world, that's because they're so close and they're so drawn to the Kedusha, that through that, and people witnessing that they really will lose their life here, Hashem will be even more sanctified, and people will recognize the force, the power of Kedusha, that it really could suck a person right away from this world, and the person doesn't even mind. It's such an experience that they don't even mind. So Ramban is saying that that's the message, with or without the pasuk. You know, Rashi is trying to find us a pasuk because Rashi's helping us read the Chumash. Moshe is saying, this is what Hashem has said. So Rashi says, where has Hashem said something like this? He said it almost like this over there. Ramban is saying, Hashem says this anyway. He's saying, Bikrovai Ekadesh, with or without a particular pasuk. Now, we talked about the idea that when Hashem speaks, what is a dibor? What is the concept of Hashem speaking? Hashem doesn't have a speaking apparatus. He doesn't have a mouth and lips and a tongue that create words. So when we say Hashem speaks, what do we really mean? So we talked about the idea that it's the same thing as saying Hashem willed. When I have a will, I convey that will to you. So now you know what I'm thinking and what I want and what my interest is, because I've allowed you to know it through speech. So speech is another way of saying how human beings come to know what the will of Hashem is, right? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. That's called Hashem speaking. Hashem speaking means we realize somehow, some way, through experience, through mind expansion, through higher and higher levels of das, somehow we get to know, it is conveyed to us, what the true will of Hashem is, what is the emes that is the source and the driving force in this world. That's called dibor. And remember that we talked about the Gemara. Rav Meisher Shapira brings down the Gemara in Chagiga that says this: Kol dibor v'dibor sheyotze mipi HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Every single word that emanates, so to speak, from Hashem, nivra mimeno malach echad. A malach is created from it. So we explained that a malach is synonymous with dibor. A malach is a force in the world that conveys a truth, a reality, an absolute truth that exists and that is sourced in the shorash of the world, the roots of the world. That's called a malach. It's a force. And we talked about the idea that when we talk about the malach Rifael, for example, what that means is there's a force in the world that Hashem embedded into the Bria, into creation, which is a healing force. It happens. We don't have to call up and ask for it. We don't have to direct it. It just happens. It exists. It's a force that exists in the world. It's a reality. It happens by itself. It's built into nature that things heal. That's called refoil. So if it exists, then it's the will of Hashem. That's a dibor. That's a malach. Hashem has conveyed it to us by us experiencing that it's the facts. Therefore, that's called Hashem has put a malach into the world, called refoil, a force in the world. So too with all the different malachim and their names. Now, there's a force in the world that we don't always get a glimpse of, but this story with Nadav and Avihu and Aaron's silence expresses this force. There is a force which is that just like the as we call it, the what we call, and you know, simplistically, the Yetzer Hara asserts a force on us to want us, as we said before, to just risk everything so that we experience the thrill of that particular satisfaction. Right? There is an equal and opposite force, maybe even more overwhelming, that allows a person, puts a person into a situation where they are willing to forego everything just to experience that sense of being sucked up completely in the Kedusha, in the Ruchnius. Now, as long as we're living, there is actually a restriction on us, and it's most, the people most in danger are the greatest righteous men and women, tzaddikim and tzidkanios, and great people who are entering into the deeper and deeper realms of Das, that they will choose to be reckless with their lives and enter into a place that gives, you know, disattaches them from life itself. And that's why Moshe was told by the Sneh, when he wanted to come closer and closer, stay back. Don't come any closer. And that's why tzaddikim are warned. We are warned, but it really applies to great tzaddikim, not to overstep the lines, even in the great, in their great ahava, in their great love, in their great yearning to attach themselves and experience the Shekhinah right here on this earth, which is what happened to Nadav and Avihu, that you're not allowed to. And yet at the same time, it comes from such an overwhelming love that it's called Lifnei Hashem. Now, we know that a person, people here, the closer a person gets to this, you know, some type of attachment to Shekhinah, the more they want it, the more it becomes almost, like Rambam says, an addiction, that they're misave acharav, that they have a yearning for it, they're chasing it all the time, it overwhelms them, it consumes them. Rambam describes it in the end of Hilchos Teshuva, like they're love struck and they can't think of anything else, or every waking moment is completely absorbed with, you know, with thoughts of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and to the point that nothing else matters. They're actually, this force also exists in the world. This is also a real force that exists and that people sometimes experience. And Moshe Rabbeinu himself, on the mountain, when he was receiving the second Luchos, he asked for more. He said, Horeini na es kvodecha, show me your kavod. And Hashem says, remember here, we just read it in Shemos, in Chavtes, right? Through my kavod, I will be honored. Moshe said, show me your kavod, give me more. And what was Hashem's answer? Lo yirani ha'adam b'chai. You cannot see this much and keep a hold on your life. It will suck you in. And that's what happened here. Now, the Medrash in Nusso says the following. Rav Dosa Omer, on this question and answer between Moshe Rabbeinu and Hashem on Har Sinai by the second Luchos, which is when, by the way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him the 13 Midos HaRachamim, right? Rav Dosa Omer, Harehu Omer, here it says, Kilo Yirani HaAdam V'chai. A person does not see me and live. It's not possible to experience both things. That type of revelation of sight, so to speak, and it doesn't mean physical sight, but expansion, understanding, and life, physical life. One will overwhelm the other. However, it says, Bechayehem einam roim, in their lives they cannot see. Aval roim heim b'sha'as misasan, but, this is the Medrash says, but people see the Shekhinah at the moment of their death. He's explaining how a neshama leaves a body when it's time to die. V'chein hu omer, and he brings a quote from Tehillim. Now, the explanation of this, what does it mean, b'sha'as misasan, that they see Hashem at the moment of their death? Okay? Einan niftarin min ha'olam. This is a rule. Nobody is nifter from this world ad sheroin pnei shechina. before they see, get a glimpse of the Shekhinah. That's how a neshama leaves a body. The moment the neshama leaves a body is because the Shekhinah, that magnetic force, the shoresh, the source, appears to the neshama, and they no longer have any power to stay attached here to this world. All they want to do is be irresistibly drawn up to the Shekhinah itself. That's the force of the Shekhinah, and that's how a neshama leaves a body at the time of Patira. The Shekhinah comes and almost collects it, because the neshama cannot stay in this body. It doesn't. No human being has the power to remain rooted in this world once they have a glimpse of the Shekhinah. The draw is so overpowering, everything else loses its power. Now here's what he brings down. Ein neshama yotza min haguf. Listen to this. No neshama leaves the guf ad shetire hashchina, until it sees the Shekhinah. That's what happens at the moment of Patira. So what we're talking about here is that that experience, although seeing the Shekhinah draws the neshama away with it, that seems to be such an overpowering experience that a person is willing, in their drunkenness, so to speak, to let that happen now. Not even to be patient to the moment of Patira, but to experience that now. That was the sin of Nadav and Avihu. Now, although we have a hard time, or I should talk for myself, have a hard time relating to this type of sin, so to speak, okay? Every person, in some degree or another, gets caught up sometimes in even mitzvahs, in Torah, that they forget that perhaps they're stepping over a line for their love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for their love of the mitzvah, for their love of, you know, for their desire to be attached to Hashem, that they step over a line and do things their own way. So this expresses itself in many different ways. For example, a person, this is a classic example, this you hear often, people who have no real Torah learning, you know, begin to be exposed to it in their early stages of their, you know, transformation, and they feel such a desire to be consumed with a feeling of love and attachment to the Ruchnius, but they feel like that the mitzvahs don't speak to them, so they're going to express that their own way. So like people have said, you know, I remember a woman once said to me, you know, on Shabbos, the way I feel most elevated is, you know, not through all these halachas, which seem so technical, but I take my guitar and I go to the river and I sing all day and it's transformed, right? So that's one aspect, but it goes even deeper for people that do know halacha and understand that that's not how we operate. We have an interesting quirk in the... I need a sitter. Who is a sitter? Listen to how... my grandfather points this out also. An interesting little quirk in the way... the Eloka here, in the way... the Yehi Ratzon, after the 15 Berchas HaShachar, is written. Okay? We have two sections. We're talking about the Yetzer Hara, and we're talking about the Yetzer Tov. So just let's read this and see what's out of place here, okay? Yehi Ratzon, right? Shetargileinu besorasecha, you should make us regular, used to. You know, our pattern should be, our habit should be, all of the Torah's ways. V'dabkeinu b'mitzvasecha, and let us cling to your mitzvahs, right? V'al tivyeinu lo lidei ched, and don't let us come, and this is a whole subject in and of itself, to sin, to error. V'lo lidei aver of avon, and different types of error. And not to a nisayon, a test, and not to disgrace, right? Protect us that we only do the right thing. Then, va'al tashlat banu yetzer hara, and don't let our yetzer hara dominate us. V'harchi kenu me'adam ra u'mechavaran, keep us very far from a bad person and a bad friend. Okay, we talked about the yetzer hara. Now we're going into the yetzer hatov. V'dav kenu b'yetzer hatov, and make us cling to yetzer hatov, ma'isim tovim, good deeds. Now, what does this mean? V'kof es yitzreinu lehishtabed lach. And, in a sense, what's kof? To subdue our yetzer, that it should only be in service of you. What is that doing in the middle of the Yetzer HaTov section? Because we're talking about the Yetzer HaTov. This is not talking about the Yetzer Hara. We're talking about a Yetzer HaTov in a person that also has to be, in and of itself, contained, managed precisely not to overstep its bounds, and it should be in the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and not in the service of the self. Not in the service of the self. There is no question that people often, for example, I mean, a simple example, people want to do chesed. But in the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, even chesed has a measure. There are people that in the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's not a chesed to do a chesed at that moment. Or it is a chesed to push oneself to do a chesed where a person's subjectivity and resistance doesn't want them to do a chesed. Somebody wants to do Achnasas Orchim, but it happens to be better for that particular guest to be somewhere else this Shabbos for their purposes. But I want to get the mitzvah, and I don't, and I, it mean, and it means a lot to me, and it's, and it'll, it's, and maybe it's even some, you know, adds to my status if I have this guest. But it's better for the person to be somewhere else. So even in terms of the Yetzer HaTov, on a simple level, that also needs analysis and self-censorship. Are we doing? Are we expressing even our Torah and our mitzvahs in a way that's not expressing ourselves and our interests? You know, and what makes us feel connected or whatever, but it's really expressing the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now here with Nadav and Avihu, and you can see how subtle this sin is, of course the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is that people should be so consumed with desire to be attached to Hashem that nothing else matters. Obviously that is the will of Hashem, right? But at the same time, the will of Hashem is that we express that love in real, practical, down-to-earth ways of Kedusha in this world. Not of total separation, like is the way of other ideologies, but in actually staying connected and grounded and expressing that in real ways. And it's true that there's a huge danger that that force and desire to be attached to Hashem will overwhelm some of the greatest people to such an extent that they'll be reckless with their lives. They won't even, it'll be so worth the experience that if they lose their lives, they'll take that risk. And that Hashem considers an avera for them on their madrega. And that's really what Moshe says to Aaron. And with this, we're going to sum up. Vayomer Moshe on who asher diber Hashem. This is the dibor. This is the devar Hashem, which is known to people, which exists as a force in the world, that it could be so strong, this desire, that it pulls the greatest people, only the greatest people, into its, you know, into its almost like, you know, core. You know, it's the gravitational pull is so overwhelming, there's no resistance. That's a dibor. That's a reality in this world. That is a force of Kedusha that exists in this world, that if you get attached to it, if you're connected to it, it starts pulling and pulling and pulling. And that's a reality. Just as the Yetzer Hara has a force like that, and it's a reality, the Yetzer Tov or the Kedusha has a force like that, and that's a Dibor, that's a Malach, that exists. And at the same time, there's a Gezeira of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is also a Dibor, a will of Hashem, that's not allowed. And Hashem determines that is not allowed, and Hashem will be meticulous with the righteous, and not give them a second chance, and take away their lives for it, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu won't say, you know, there's no way here. It's also a dibor, it's also a reality, it's also gezeira from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that this is the outcome, this is the ramifications, and Hashem can't in a sense have rachmanis on this area, because it's not a matter of rachmanis, it's a matter of real truth. This is what happens. And then Vayidom Aaron. Aaron accepts this. Aaron knows this. And here's the striking thing. And Rashi brings down. Now look what Moshe said to Aaron. Amar LeMoshe, back there in Tetzaveh, when Hashem said, I'll be on, my kavod will be greater, sanctified. And Rashi says, don't read it, my kavod, but those who are the mechubadai, those who honor me, through them I'll be sanctified. Now listen to this. Amar lo Moshe l'Aaron. Moshe said to Aaron, Aaron Achi, Aaron my brother, Yodea Hayiti, Sheyitkadesh Habayis, Bimiyuda of. I knew that this Mishkan somehow would be sanctified by those who knew Hashem most, the ones who knew him. However, okay, Bimiyuda of Shomakom, Bahayisi Sover, but you know what I thought? Obaha. It would be me or you that this would happen to. This would be a great danger for us. One or either me or you would get caught up in this. And somehow we'd sanctify the Mishkan on its opening day through our own deaths this way. But Achshav Roa Ani, now I see Shehem Gedolim Mimeni Mimcha, they were greater than me and you. They were even higher. They couldn't hold, they couldn't resist. That's what Ahashem's, that's what Moshe said to Aaron. And Vayidum Aaron was silent. He understood this too. He understood this great love that his children had for HaKadosh Baruch Hu that took them away. And then the Pasuk explains, this is what it means, Bekrovai HaKadosh, this experience that Klal Yisrael all witnessed and became embedded in Klal Yisrael's consciousness till today, this is a truth. We all witnessed this, that actually through the death of tzaddikim, who die because of their great love and Mesiras Nefesh for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's how we become even more in awe of the koach of Ruchnius in this world. Look what it can do to people. My grandfather tells a story that he witnessed, or that he, no, actually I don't know if he witnessed, but he was told this. In Germany, he got out before the deportations and all that, but it was still bad times. And he got out right before Kristallnacht, and there was a Jew who a Nazi approached on the street. You know, it was chaos, the anarchy for a while prior to everything. And he pulled out a revolver, and he pointed it at the Jew's head, and he said, "Deny that you believe in God. Curse God." He wanted him to say God's name with a curse attached to it. So the person looked at the Nazi, and he screamed with all his might, "Never!" with a revolver at his head. And the Nazi put away his gun and said, "I just wanted to see if you had the guts. You know, I just wanted to test you." Now, where does a person get that kind of strength from? How powerful is the koach of Kedusha, even in a regular person, that they don't care about death? It's not worth living if they have to disgrace Hashem's name. That concept, that is something we experience. We know that to be true. Our regular people can achieve that madriga. There's a tremendous force of Bikrovai HaKadosh, and we say that, see that the people who know Hashem and are closest to HaKadosh Baruch Hu are willing to have that be the dominant force in their life, overwhelming everything else. That gives everybody else who hears about it and witnesses a greater sense of awe of the force of truth in the world and the force of Kedush in the world. Look at the courage it gives people. Look at the strength and the determination it gives people. Look how what the priorities it gives people. Look what it does. It's an overwhelming force. And we experience that. And Klal Yisrael experienced that at the Hakamas of Mishkan, the day of the final dedication day of the Mishkan. And that experience stayed with us and gives us koach forever to, in our own ways, do similar things. Okay. All right, everybody. Have a wonderful... I just want to say that today... Parshas Para. I just want to say, we'll talk about it next week. This shir and the learning is Refuah Shleima for Yeshua ben Chaya, right? You're welcome.